Blog Talk Radio.
Out here in the perimeter, there are no stars. Out here, we is stone, the immaculate.
Now listen to this.
I was up in the morning with the TV blaring, brushing my teeth, sitting, watching the news. All the beaches were closed, the ocean was a red sea, but there was no one there to part it in two. There was no fresh salad, cause there's hypers in the cabbage. Staten Island disappeared at noon. And they say the Midwest is in great distress, and NASA blew at the moon. But ozone layer has no ozone anymore, and you're gonna leave me for the guy next door. I'm sick of you. I'm sick of you. They arrested the mayor for an illegal favor, so the Empire States of Japan. And Oliver North married William C. Cord and gave birth to a little Tehran. And the Ayatollah bought a nuclear warship. If he dies, he wants to go out in style. And there's nothing to eat that don't carry the stink of some human waste dumped in the Nile. But one thing is certainly true. No one here knows what to do, and I'm sick of you.
Yeah,
I'm sick of you.
And welcome to the Full Moon Eve edition of Tuma Time. I'm your host, the Culture Vulture, Dr. Mark. The number to call to get on the line, 646-478-4847. And it's a plethora of culture and social entrainment tonight. It's just, you know, we get to these full moons, we're arriving tomorrow night in your nightly sky, as we join you here from beautiful downtown Larchmont on a steamy 90-degree day in late May. I just, you know, we're at that point in the spring where people like me who just can't stand the summer start getting fidgety, you know, because it's coming. Hazy, hot, and humid. And what brings up hazy, hot, and humid more than the Gulf, where today BP's best experts and all the king's horses and all the king's men went down to the bottom of the ocean, but you know what happened?
You filthy criminals.
Well, they can't seem to tell if it's working yet. So I don't know. I haven't looked at the latest yet, but from what I saw, I mean, the day started out with you know, one of our little space shuttles landing back on the Earth, and the middle of the day, we're looking at this oil thing spilling out all over the place. It gets to be a little wearisome, you know? There's so much going on. Super Bowls are being declared. It's been one of those weeks where you're just like, I'm exhausted from you guys. There's too much going on, you know? I got Takahashi racking up six innings against the Phillies. All right, try hang on to a two-run lead against the Phillies for the next two or three innings. But, I guess I'm going to start with a little Soma news here. But let me just, I'm going to take a little detour here. I did plan on something, but I will go this direction because it's somewhat germane to the discussion. Let's see if I can find it now. The computer is working tonight, in case any of you guys are regular listeners when I have a little computer fit. But It's got the little sluggish to it, so I'm going to take my time here getting to my story. But if we go, and we've been tracking these things over and over again. Last week we discussed the MRSA scare, you know, tenfold increase in the cases of MRSA, that horrible flesh-eating disease that the CDC is now waving the flag about because, you know, the treatment they gave for it was causing the increase in the incidences. It's kind of strange. David Wright. Nice. We could have a, let's see, little look in here at Citi Field. All right, we got a leadoff double out of David Wright. He hits a lot better with nobody on base. Get into that later, maybe. A lot of stuff going on with the Metsies. So, as my computer meanders its way to, as I'm like, what, 3 minutes into the show, I'm already like, where am I going? So this, anybody watched this today, you know, they're doing this thing where they're going to try and kill the well from above, And, you know, you're how many miles below the ocean, and you're watching this thing just billowing out oil. I mean, just billowing out oil. And if you've watched any of the clips the last couple of days, you know, you see a dolphin that's full of oil, dead. You see pelicans all black and full of gunk, and people shoveling little crumbs of oil up off the beach there. It's just strange. It really is strange. It's like, you know, you wonder what we were thinking, so to speak. But I kind of figured it out. I mean, I'm having been in the healthcare field for low these 20 years, I know what the decision making process is. It's always profits over people, and it's always, you know, what can we do to delay the inevitable the most? And when it comes to something like this, that's what happened. There's no way to fix it. We haven't improved the technology in 30 years. We've always privatized it. We've always pushed it off on these corporations to manage these things. And, you know, if you're out there hammering away at the floor of the ocean for the last 40 years, you're bound to have one or two fender benders that causes ecosystem meltdowns. You know, I mean, what are you going to do? What are you going to do about it? You know, and so now we're kind of wearing it like a hat, literally. We tried the top hat solution. That didn't work. Just trying to get to it. This computer now, I'm going to admit on the air, this computer hates me. Why squirrel don't like me? You know, it's just doing everything in its power to drive me nuts. I'm going to try me some Mozilla. Mozilla in the highest. Oh, the Mets have second and third and nobody out. This is getting good. All right, so let's see. We're going to just plug in the old news theme here. This is nuts. See, Mozilla doesn't have near the bugs that the Internet Explorer 8 has. When I'm flipping around getting my stories here, I'm going to stick with the Mozilla. Let's see. Top kill attempt to plug oil begins. Dan, 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 dan. Let's see. You know, part of somatics, as we talk on Soma Time, is dealing with your surroundings. Barajas in the corner. There we go. Once and a dos equis for the Mets. 4-0 New York. There you go, 4-0. Thank you, Sergeant and Officer Blanton. Very straight. Nice. All right, here we go. BP effort to plug Gulf oil spill going as planned. Covington, Louisiana. BP started pumping heavy mud. This is the known as the junk shot. I love that. What'd they get there from the porn industry? The junk shot. It just sounds like something that, okay, we're going to try the junk shot. It spewed millions of gallons of oil the last 5 weeks. BP hoped the mud could overpower the steady stream of oil, but Chief Executive Officer Tony Hayward said it would take at least 24 hours before officials know whether the attempt was successful. I'm sure many of you have been watching the plume. This is my breast. My best British accent. Hayward said from Houston. All I can say is unlikely to give us any real indication of what's going on. Either increases or decreases are not an indicator of success or failure at this time. The stakes are high. Fishermen, hotel and restaurant owners, politicians, and residents along the coast are fed up with BP. You know, we're now relying on mud. Amazing. This is the best they can do. We're doing everything we do to bring it to closure, and actually we're executing the top kill job as efficiently as we can. Obama's going to be there on Friday after the 24-hour waiting period. That's why he didn't show up before. Why would a politician show up before when he's got a 24-hour window? He's out there raising money. Frustration with BP and the federal government has grown since the leaks have failed. Louisiana Governor Bobby Jindal, oh, he's another all-star, and Plaquemines Parish President Billy Nunziger, our outspoken critics, led a boat tour around the oil-filled delta near the mouth of the Mississippi. Some 100 miles of the Louisiana coastline have been hit by the oil. I mean, this is terrible. I mean, no matter what happens, this is so bad, so effing bad, you can't even put your mind around it. You can't. They got these oil spill photos from space, haunting images. I mean, what are you going to do with this stuff at a certain point? So that's one big story. And it remains to me a very big story in the sense that, you know, what comes next? You know, I don't know what happens next after something like this. It's kind of screwy. You know, because I mean, at the end of the day, what are we going to do? We're going to just absorb this like we've absorbed all the other hits and try to take it from there. Boy. So let's go back to our summer news, because we do have a guest at the bottom of the hour, and he's as irate as me. Irate. And we got a score coming in here. Bink, you're out. 2-1 Florida. Is that a final? I can't read that. Beating the Braves. So let's see. Let's go back to our linky dinkies here. Because there's been a lot of news, health news, that, and tonight's theme is about disease marketing. You know, we talked about the sick environment and what it's doing to our Gulf Shore and stuff, but let's take a look at ourselves, shall we? La-da-doo-da-dum, as we go to the Mozilla. Oh, it's only a sixth inning there at Atlanta. Well, we'll get to the baseball scores here at some point. We'll get Susan Waldman up. John? I don't know, John. Let's see. I need a little of that. Whoops. All right, so if you've been, you know, busy doing things like living your life, this is some of the things that creeped across my radar. I can just play my little intro. Fighting the computer once again. What are you doing? Just play the damn song. You gonna play it?
Boozy, boozy, bop, city bop.
Thank you. Eco from hell. All right, so here we have a little story. Stress is 9/11 blamed for 12% rise in miscarriages. Okay, now here's a great example of, you know, social stress, somatic stress anyway. A spike in miscarriages of babies born throughout the U.S. in September 2001. Researchers blame the stress of moms to be suffered because of 9/11, even though they had no direct link to the terrorist attacks. How about that for a little non-locality? Huh? The miscarriages increased 12% of what was expected for that month. A report from the medical journal BMC Public Health. The researchers believe a phenomenon known as communal bereavement. Oh, no! Communal bereavement! Widespread distress among people who... I got to talk about that one. Write that down. Communal bereavement. Widespread distress among people who are unconnected to national catastrophes may be the reason. We do grieve for people we don't know. Tony Bruckner, professor at the University of California, Irvine, lead writer of the report, male fetuses are more sensitive than female fetuses to heightened levels of corticosteroids. That might feed into our proposed guest next month. They wrote a book called The Male Brain. Interesting. Interesting. Phillies are falling apart here in the inning here. Across many species, stressful times reportedly reduce male birth rate. He and fellow researchers from Berkeley analyzed 7 years of data about miscarriages from the National Vital Statistics System to figure out how many male fetuses losses we've expected in a normal September. They didn't include stats from California because an earlier study in which Berkeley participated and found post-9/11 rise in miscarriages in male fetuses in that state. Interesting. It's a reasonable hypothesis and one that calls for further study. It means we should be looking at Haiti and ongoing trauma there, for instance. Babies in utero are particularly vulnerable to stress hormones because of their developing brains. Hello, we're talking biology there. So how that right there demonstrates to me that we're talking soma there. Why can't we give the soma some credit? It's intelligent. Ooh, it adapted. It dealt with this communal bereavement coming into the sad, sad world. So that's one story that kind of crept across. What do you think of that one? Communal bereavement. We grieve for people we don't know. Now we'll take that leap of fact. See if we can attach something to that one. Here's another story. Came across my radar. Zibo, zibop, zibop. The Hubble, as we go from the bottom of the ocean to the outer reaches of space, discovered a planet in our galaxy in the process of being devoured by the star that it orbits. The doomed planet, dubbed WASP-12b, has the highest known surface temperature of any planet in the Milky Way. Around 1,500 degrees Celsius. That's 2,800 to you Fahrenheit faggots. All right? But it could be enveloped by its own parent star over the next 10 million years. This takes 10 million years to cook a planet? Wow. Using a new instrument called the Cosmic Origin Spectrograph. I want to be the guy that names these things. We'll call it the Cosmic Origin Spectrograph, the COS. That was installed in the Hubble in 2009. Researchers observed how the planet was whipped into an elongated shape by gravitational forces. And it really looks like this thing is being barbecued on this picture here. We see a huge cloud of material on the planet, which is escaping, will be captured by the star. We have identified chemical elements never before seen outside our own solar system. Well, that's always fun. Discovered in 2008, WASP-12b is located about 600 light years from Earth in the Orgina constellation and is more than 300 times the size of the Earth. And you see this thing, it's like a little pea. All right? It's about 40% greater than the mass of Jupiter. Wow. 300 times the size of the Earth. And it takes how many years to cook it? It's going to take a while, I guess. Astronomers already also knew that the stars will swallow the planet the first time that it's been observed. Predicted the planet's surface would be distorted by the star's gravitational pull and that the gravitational tidal forces would make the interior so hot it would greatly expand the outer atmosphere. So it cooks it like a chestnut roasting under an open star. So there you go. So you got the cosmos devouring planets, you've got oil in the middle, and you've got miscarriages on walking around on the planet here. So there's three little stories. And now, just to throw a little log on the fire here as we get ready to talk disease, I love that topic. Yes, I love this business. Your old disease. All right, let's see what we got here. Fewer sugary drinks may lower blood pressure. Oh, my God. Well, they just hit it. They hit a double. That circle gets the square. Where's my switchboard? Because blood pressure is going to be my big thing this show, because we're going to be having our friend on here to talk about it. Let's see if I can find something to appropriately. Yes. With the
whoop. You know what I'm saying? Then you got the flows. They didn't trip off the flow masses.
That decoration, man. Just the decoration.
That's right. All right. So here we go. Dateline Chicago from Reuters. Drinking fewer sugary drinks may help lower your blood pressure. Okay, genius. U.S. researchers said on Monday the findings add to a body of research supporting cutting back on sweetened beverages. They found that fat people, otherwise known as overweight people, with high blood pressure, who drank one less sugar-laden, I love that expression, sugar-laden, communal bereavement, sugar-laden beverages, what if we get sad for people drinking the sugar? Significantly lowered their blood pressure over 18 months. Most Americans means cutting back one soft drink intake in half. Wait. For most Americans, this means cutting soft drink intake in half. We found if you lower consumption of sugary drinks, it may help reduce your blood pressure. If you reduce your consumption by two servings, you'd lower it even more. Well, this is real. Just amazing. Shen studied specifically at the effect of sugar intake on blood pressure. The team used data on 810 adults aged 25 to 79 with borderline high blood pressure readings of 120 over 80 to 139 over 89 and stage 1 hypertension readings of 140 over 90 or 159 over 99. Okay. At the start of the study, people drank 10 and a half ounces of one serving of sweetened beverages. This included drinks with sugar, high fructose, soft drinks, fruit drinks, lemonade. After 18 months, average consumption had fallen off by half a serving, and both the systolic, the top number, and the diastolic, the bottom number, had fallen significantly. They said drinking one less soft drink per day resulted in 1.8 millimeters of mercury drop in systolic pressure and cut diastolic pressure by 1.1 millimeters. It's all a game of millimeters in the disease world. Weight loss is part of the reason, but not all. Americans drink an average of 2.3 servings of sweetened, sugar-laden beverages per day. Yeah, 2.3, eh? The American Beverage Association says sugar-sweetened drinks do not pose any particular health risk. Well, why would they? And are not unique risk factors for obesity or heart disease. Well, that's tremendous. Really? I think the guys that sell cigarettes say this is not addicting to. You got to be kidding me. So there you go, more blood pressure news. And there's another story here that I just kind of I found today on my Facebook feed. As the Mets are finally retired here, 5-0 Mets as we go to the seventh, I guess, was again another one of these blood pressure stories. Why are we all trying to fight the blood pressure? We think it's a disease. And then this is a marketing effort on both sides, the holistic side and on the allopathic side, to make this thing into a disease. Not a disease. I have the land... Let's see. I'll call him this. I'll call him the domestic United States expert on defeating this argument. Coming on in about 10 minutes. See if any of you guys are out there. Nobody out there calling me, so I'm not missing any of that. I will now open up the chat room. Anybody have any questions? You want to get on? So we're going to be hitting the safe line here in about 10 minutes and taking a tour of some of the games that people play, the 10 o'clock hour. Lots of stuff. Lots of stuff. So we got oil. We got boiling planets. What a dopey show. Every week I get on here, I don't know what I'm doing. All right, come on. Let's go. I want to get to this chiropractic thing before we get him on the air here. We've got 10 minutes to go here before he calls up. What a weird night. It's a weird night. Anybody interested in what I'm doing, go over to somerspace.org. Check out all the stuff I got poking around up there. It's an endless display of dementia that I share with you there to learn all about the funny world of somatics and how we're all wired and all that stuff. I'm kind of abandoning the concepts I put up there. I'm not doing a wootorial tonight, as you notice. I did play the woo-woo song, but I'm not doing a wootorial. You guys don't read them. I don't want to write them. I'm sick of it. It's kind of a contract I have with you guys. I'm just a tick lazier than you. This is a podcast for most of you. You're listening back. Can't get here at 9 o'clock on Wednesday night. You're too busy watching all the other stuff. We will cut to idle in the middle of our serious talk about disease care 2.0. With Dr. Robert Affolter here at the bottom of the hour to reveal the American Idol winner. We have to get that on the air before we get done tonight because, we have our finger on the pulse of the rigor mortis that is the culture. I can't believe this thing has taken this long to get over there. Unbelievable. Every week I fight this computer. If you looked at my desktop right now, I mean, Picasso couldn't have a better picture. There is literally nothing working. Fascinating. Things are half open. Looks like the Philadelphia experiment, only on a computer. Things are stuck in other dimensions. Doesn't matter how many times I reboot. I walk around the computer three times. I put some garlic in the corner. The feng shui is good. But every week around 9 o'clock on Wednesday night, this thing has an aneurysm. Unbelievable. Well, I'm going to try and get this article here. I think I'm going to stick with my Mozilla. Mozilla! If I can find it, because it was just a little AP feed. So I'll see if I can find it. Blood pressure. What a useless thing that Internet Explorer is. Really is. It's just useless. Sugar laden drinks. Is this it? Let's see. Let's go to news. Oh, was it? It was. This thing was posted on WebMD. Wow. Yeah. See, what they're doing in chiropractic now, we'll probably get into this with our guest, Ms. Safeline, is I guess it's from out west. Let's see if I can get the exact locale of this post. It's a CBS affiliate. I'm not sure where, though. CBS Local. West of Owega. This is undated, which is weird. Anyway. Cynthia DeMoss was the reporter, and basically chiropractic treatment helps blood pressure, okay? High blood pressure affects millions of Americans, one out of every three. If left untreated, it can be deadly, okay? There's your disease marketing right there. Beware, 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 the blood pressure is coming to get you. Most people take medication to control it, but some people have found a simple way to turn their numbers down outside of cutting down their sugar drinks. They're turning to chiropractic. The mad dash to get kids off to school, the crazy commute and work are enough to raise anyone's blood pressure. Just ask Adrian Casper. We work on deadlines, and that makes it difficult, says the busy accountant. All the changes in the law keep me in business, but keep us also stressed out. Like many people, the stress began to take its toll, and Caspar was forced to go on medication. He liked the idea of going to the meds, so he visited his chiropractor, Peter Matrone. Dr. Matrone is using a new adjustment to the neck. I'd love to know what that is, to help bring the pressure down. If the bone is out of alignment and putting pressure on the nerve, it interferes with the ability of the heart to function properly. Really? Mr. Vegas, huh? After a few visits, Casper's blood pressure was normal. Bill Bird was also has a stressful job. He's a car salesman. He was also on blood pressure meds and wanted to try the suggestion of his daughter, dragged him over to Matrone here. A few adjustments, and bada bing, his primary care physician cut his medication in half. Another 30 to 45 days, and my blood pressure stays at this level, I'll be off at 100%. The treatment is experimental, but studies show it actually might work. Unlike, the drugs that come out, and then they take them off because they don't work. This is a very novel concept, explained blood pressure specialist George Backris. Uh-oh. That's going to go plop. They caught one. Let's see. He sent him to the chiropractor with the same adjustment Dr. Martone uses, some miraculous changes in the blood pressure, enough to catch the attention of the federal government. Dun, dun, dun! The National Institutes of Health is now funding a study to see if the findings can be duplicated. While Dr. Backris believes the study is exciting, he admits there's a lot of unanswered questions. I think we have to really find out what's going on, why this is happening. Amazing. Casper and Bird said they have all the proof they need. I feel better, and feeling better is the way to be. Bird agreed. I feel younger. I've never felt better. Foomp. Dr. Backris believes it is likely to work on people who have some sort of neck trauma, even if it's falling off a swing as a child. Nice theory. He believes if your hypertension is hereditary, though, you're screwed. he says, this may not work for you. The experts also warn that patients should not stop taking their blood pressure medication without talking to their doctor first while they work for the beverage company that supports drinking as much sugar as you want. This kid fell down again. Also the man half the time. All right. So there's a little potpourri. I don't really know if I can get on this dopey. I'm trying to get in the Met chat room, see if I can get some banter going here. Get to the top of them. We'll probably be at the ninth inning around the top of the hour here if everything goes according to plan. So there you go. There's a little review of the literature, as it were. So what do you think of all that stuff? Because to me, it's the same old crap, different day. They continually scare you, and then they give you this very nebulous, I'm going to say nebulous, kind of solution that's in a cloud, wrapped by a riddle, confirmed by one expert who's drinking a sugar-laden drink. And it's all meant to just basically steer you in the direction where somebody gets paid. Whether it's going to be a researcher getting his funding, whether it's going to be a corporation getting you to consume certain beverages, whatever. They're constantly, constantly playing the shell game with us. And I don't know, we're too consumed with our stress to read it, I guess. But that seems to be what's happening over and over again. You know, and maybe, like I said, once we get our expert in here to... Oh, there he is! Dun, dun, dun! Right on time! All right, let's see. It was my Safe Vine music. Joining us now from an undisclosed location, far, far in the northwest. We have the highly influential, always exciting, and cutting edge chiropractor from the left coast, Robert Apple. As he dances onto the stage. Are you out there?
I am here.
All right. Well, I don't know about you, but I've been doing nothing but reading blood pressure studies for the last 20 minutes. And
I've been listening to you for about 5 to 10 minutes and just laughing out loud. You've been great.
I just can't believe how much bullshit can get through people's ears as news. I want to just the reporter. The sugar one was even better. But well, okay. Now, it's been about what?
Well, did you see the tanning one last night?
Did I see what last night?
The tanning one last night.
No, I missed the tanning one.
NBC Nightly News last night, they interviewed their medical director, and
uh-huh.
we must make sure that we use the right tanning lotion.
Uh-huh.
And just because it gives mice cancer doesn't mean it's going to give us cancer.
Well,
but
yeah,
for sure, if you get a tan, by definition, you've damaged your skin.
Yeah. Well, you kind of burned yourself on purpose.
We can't go out in the sun.
No.
And we won't have any vitamin D, but they've got a cure for that.
Yeah, well, I'm still looking for when Merck comes out with a drug for gravity. That's when I'll retire. But I'm just amazed. I mean, we're like a week and a half removed from when they dismissed the cell phone brain cancer study, right? They threw that out the window. They're chasing the autism people away from the pesticides. Don't look at that. I think the curtain is getting thinner, and the wizard is scrambling behind the curtain to hide all this crap. Because I didn't catch the tanning thing. But now, it's been what, about 15 months since you put your e-books out there that have caused a lot
right.
of ripples. And what's been the feedback both from the public first, and then from the, I'll just call it loosely, the professional community on what you wrote?
It's been pretty quiet so far. And what I really want to do is I'm finding that a lot of people would rather have a paper book that they can take with them.
Uh-huh.
So we're going to put it out as a paperback. Should be out in a couple of weeks. And generate a little bit different way of doing it.
Now, for people who maybe never heard you on the show before, there's two books, and just kind of tell us like the genesis of them and what each of them are about, then we'll get into some examples here.
Well, I guess it really traces back to when I was an undergrad student, I wrote a paper on health maintenance organizations. My father was a chiropractor, so I was interested in health care and what was going on with that. And at that time, it was back in the 70s, health maintenance organizations were just a new thought. Nobody knew. I mean, Kaiser in California was the only one that was doing anything. So it was a new thought, and I did some research on that, and then found out about the Flexner Report, I think, as part of that. I did another paper as part of my MBA program on chiropractic and healthcare, and so mm-hmm. I did some research there. But really what I learned was, as part of that, was how much politics has been involved in healthcare. So now mm-hmm. we've got this whole deal, now that I've been involved in practicing chiropractic for 25 years, and the government comes out with, you know, healthcare costs are going out of control. And I'm going, wait a minute, you guys were the cause of this. So my first book, the first part of this book, what I've done is taken two e-books. The first one was called Exposed, How Politics Increased the Cost of Healthcare in America. And that one talks about how, you know, first of all, I go through, because I've got an MBA, I also went through the classic economic structure of the supply and demand curves, and I do a couple pages on that, and then talk about how the government has basically forced supply down, which increases prices, while at the same time increasing demand by forcing us to vaccinate our children, telling us that, you know, we have to go in for all kinds of tests. Mm-hmm. And that increases demand, and, of course, they've reduced supply by licensing physicians and reducing the thought process, actually, by only allowing allopathic medicine to gain a foothold. We've really reduced the thought process. And then I also go through how, actually, allopathic medicine is based on an evolution concept that I just don't believe can be logically defended. So that's the first book. Then the second one is how Exposed is what I title it again, Exposed, and it's the, quote, science, end quote, of medicine and the dollars it generates. And in that one, what I go through is how we're no longer use the standard concepts of science when we talk about medicine. We're using statistical analysis, which shows us that even minor differences must be treated. And we go through things as small as, and we've talked about this on a previous show, but as small mm-hmm. as this 5% difference in people with high blood pressure, only 5% of those with the highest blood pressure are going to have either a stroke or heart disease, and yet we're medicating 95% of them.
Yeah, well,
and we're telling people, you know, that this is going to make them well.
Well, and this is the heart of what I'm saying tonight, is that this, in the era of this, we'll just call it, I can't even use the word health. In the era of reforming the way that insurance companies and drug companies get paid, they've gone from basically, they went from over the counter, off labeling, and now they're just, frankly, they're just promoting a laundry list of syndromes and symptoms that then, of course, have the magic pill at the end of the commercial and pointing you right at the doctor. So you're walking into the doctor's office saying, I need my prescription to Lunesta, I need my, you know, my prostate medication, and it's like the doctor basically is like becoming like the pharmacist, where it's like the orders are coming from the media. And so
exactly.
hypertension has become the new one that is very easy to scare the public with because of the correlation you just make. Now, in your book, you systematically kind of comb through the way that this happened, the way hypertension became a disease and not an aberrant condition of somebody's physiology. Give us kind of like a thumbnail of how that you went through and you discovered, okay, if we start off with what's normal and go from there, because I don't think people understand hypertension is not a disease. You know,
all right.
It's like hyperventilating.
Well, and we do this, and this is just one example, and that's what I was trying to get at, is this is just one example of how we actually create diseases out of normal physiology.
Yeah.
Or maybe some aberrant physiology, but we're actually creating a disease out of thin air. So what we do is we take, I don't want to get into normal because we aren't even looking at normals anymore. What we're doing is saying, okay, we've got a problem. The problem is with blood pressure isn't blood pressure. It's stroke and heart disease. So what they've done is they've been trying to, ever since Virchow came up with the blood pressure cuff, we've been trying to figure out some rationale for taking blood pressure, right? So we finally say, okay, well, maybe there's a hypothesis that maybe high blood pressure causes blood vessels to burst in your brain, and that would be a stroke, or causes some kind of heart damage because it's overworked. So let's test that hypothesis. So what I go through in the book is the falsification method of science, which is basically in the hard sciences, like it, in Hawking talks about, in physics, if you have one event that disproves or falsifies your theory, you throw out the theory.
Uh-huh.
All it takes is one thing. You falsify your idea and it's gone. But in medicine, what we do in our falsification process is that there's no difference between two groups, a control group and our experimental group. So if we can show that there's any difference, then we've falsified our hypothesis that there's no difference. Well, that's a pretty weak way to go about science. Because what we do is we show that, like with blood pressure, there's like, I forgot what it is, it's less than 1% of people, I think it is, have stroke if they have low blood pressure, but it's much higher if they have high blood pressure, but it's still not over 5%. So we've disproven the idea that there's no difference between the two groups. And yet, we then take that data and say, okay, since there is a difference between the two groups, we must medicate everybody that's got high blood pressure. And yet only 5% of the people are going to benefit because only 5% of them were going to either have a stroke or heart disease. So we've immediately created this new disease called high blood pressure, which wasn't doing anything for 95% of the people that have it, and yet we're going to convince everybody that they need to be medicated. Imagine how that's driving up our cost of health care. It's crazy.
The qualification is that in order to get health care, I've got to be sick. So I better come in with some label on me, otherwise they're just going to test me until they find something, as you say, that could be a function of a physiological imbalance that could be transient, that could be due to activity, that could be due to, you know, I mean, like someone that hyperventilates who runs up hills a lot, you know, it's like there's no context to this stuff. So,
or maybe it's just normal.
Or it could be.
Maybe some people just run, my blood pressure runs a little bit
body
high.
Body temperature has a variation. It used to be that
sure.
There was a range of adaptation that the body can govern itself in, and if you track somebody over a long enough period of time, you know, it would white noise itself out, but because we have snapshot medicine and everything is pee in a cup and take a little blood and then, you know, let's go to the tote board and see what we get. Nobody looks at anything rhythmically. I always ask people when they get their allopathic interventions done whether they be, well, definitely when it comes to imaging because, you know, I don't know, you know, on the West Coast, but out here everybody's MRI happy. Is that, you know, someone will have low back pain, they'll slap them on an MRI and pronounce that they have a disc problem, and I'm like, you were lying on your back, right? Yeah, I was on my back, doc. I was, well, you don't have much of a lumbar curve when you're not standing, so I don't know what they're doing with the mechanics here. But nobody ever questions it because you can't talk to the radiologist. The tech does the imaging, and then the mysterious doctor behind the wall again does all the diagnosing. He submits the claim, and everybody rubber stamps it. But nobody gets into the inside baseball, so to speak, of are these tests useful? And are they giving me contextually relevant information? Most of the time, they're not. The blood test and the urine test, I always ask them, what time of the day did you take this? Did they make sure that, you know, you didn't have a sugar-laden drink, like I was talking about before? Because that'll affect a lot of your biochemistry. You know, cause I've seen people literally come into my office from downtown Larchmont here with a Frappuccino in one hand and a cigarette in the mouth, right, coming into the office. You know, they're getting out of their car. I'll be looking at them across the street. They throw the Frappuccino in the garbage. They put the cigarette butt out in the street. They step on it. They come walking in, and I'm going, you got to be kidding me. You know, it's like this is what we're dealing with. And again, anytime you're dealing with outpatients, it's like an open air, psych ward. Everybody's behavior is governed by their own standards. So that's why when you put these transparent allopathic standards over it, and you use this testing method where it's completely context free, you're going to get a lot of holes and not a lot of cheese here. So it's any wonder anybody gets a clear sense of what they're supposed to be. Again, I hate that word normal because it's what population of people. Like the study they did for the sugary drinks had an age range and it's like, okay, what are those people's lifestyles about? What are you testing? And they again, because of the fact that it's always meant to just get another scare tactic out, I don't know anymore if it's the science that's flawed or the politics that's that good, because it seems like you could always buy a researcher for the right price to cook the books a little bit and create a study or create a format where there's like no way to win, where it's like one-way checkers in a sense. And the public just loves reading these little blips of all these things that are wrong, and nobody ever changes their behavior. Has one of these studies ever scared somebody away from a soda? I mean, it's like, you know. Then they'll come out, the best part, this chiropractic study that came out, it's all about upper cervical care. That's the only thing that Nuke is the only guys that seem to be able to get anybody's ear down there at NIH. And they keep throwing them money because a couple of the allopaths, you know, they patted them on the head and they kind of like them. And, you know, those are the same guys adjusting these hypertension people, right? As my soda can mm-hmm. playing in the garbage can. those are the same guys, same allopaths, that if one of these upper cervical guys did one of those rotary moves or something and somebody strokes out, they would be the first guy with the pitchforks and the torches running them out of town on a rail. So how do you have it both ways there?
If you're going I think that part's getting better. I don't think it's the same guys.
I'm about to say individual guys, same profession. Allopathy will sponsor, chiropractic when it behaves itself. And it operates within parameters like only upper cervical, only this, for this condition, go. And it's a few adjustments,
right.
And go.
Well,
and then
but that's
good.
Their mentality. How they can't break it. They can't break the mentality.
I'm not blaming them for not breaking it. I'm blaming us for taking the government cheese on it and thinking
right.
that's going to somehow give us efficacy or credibility or anything else except, being assimilated into that system. And then once you do that for that model, you can't go and say, well, I'm trying to look at systemic behavior. I'm trying to look at global physiological benefits. No. You want to be Mr. Specific. You only get to adjust the neck when someone comes in with blood pressure in this range and according to study X. And you live at the small end of the funnel. What was that thing a million years ago? One of those crazy chiropractors said it was a narrow focus and a what was it? And a wide application, something like that?
Yeah, Grostick went through that, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
The straights had a narrow focus but a broad application, and the others had a broad application but a narrow focus, right?
Yeah, and again, all at the end of the day, all you can do is when you look at some of this stuff, especially as we start building towards whatever the reform is going to be after all the dust settles here, is that the population that's out there trying to get care. First of all, there's less providers than there were across the board, holistic and allopathic. And if they're going to react to this kind of quote-unquote science, this media-based science where it's all symptom and symptom solution and now the weather, where there's no context, as we get deeper into this tall grass, both as a professional, you're 25 years out, I'm 20, almost 20 years out, how do you see it affecting the new guys coming out with, upwards of $200,000 of school loans, no insurance anymore, and an ocean of people looking for the needle in the haystack when what they're really doing is they're making specialists out of everybody, in a sense, if everything's going to go by symptom syndrome and whatever study that supports that, because everything has to be evidence-based now, And whose evidence? Their evidence.
Yeah, but I'm still a little bit more hopeful than that.
I'm never that. I've learned to completely. I mean, come on, we're getting advice from the Lunestra Moth out there. I mean, we're dealing with people that, you know, bad.
You filthy criminals.
I mean, how could you trust these guys to do anything but the wrong thing here? And I don't think it's more about exploiting an already exploitable public. I think it's now about abusing an overwrought provider system that hasn't been represented in any of this stuff to date. If you talk to individual docs, I mean, even the ones that are in the system that work in hospitals, I mean, they've been suffering under being capped and just a lot of bureaucratic layers have been put in there, and it's only going to get more and more bureaucratic because you're trying to control cost ultimately, and giving people more access to the third leading cause of death. I can't say that enough and feel good. If you have a system that's the third leading cause of death, bodies are dropping all over the highway, and more people are going to get access to it using sugar-laden drinks and oh God, and communal bereavement, you know, as their flags. So I don't know how you get out of that. To me, it just seems like a Mobius strip that should be floating at the bottom of the Gulf. You know, that just should be, you know, maybe poisons a fish that somebody eats in a restaurant later, but. I guess when I look, and then we're going to get into some chiropractic nuts and bolts here in a minute because some stuff's come out over the wire the last 2 or 3 weeks that I wanted to get your take on. When you look at any disease that gets marketed, now we're getting, you just said the tanning salons. They're going to start, the poisonous sun is going to become the big culprit for the next couple of months around here as we build into the heat of the summer and everyone starts talking about cancer. What is it, I mean, and MRSA, I don't know if you saw last week, the big MRSA study, that there's 10 times the cases of MRSA because of the antibiotic they were giving out that, of course, made more MRSA. So, and the West Coast being much more progressive and open-minded and tolerant of, you know, you guys are so tolerant compared to us, you know, all sphincterics over here on the East Coast, loving our drugs. As you see the landscape shifting, and more conversations going on between the professions as things kind of line up, what is it about the disease marketing, I'll just call it what it is, cartel, that you think an individual practitioner can impact? Because it used to be, tell the story when I got out of school. And all things would be great. Shangri-La, people would be coming in on Gonstead buses, you know. And what I see happening is less and less chiropractic care, more and more neuromusculoskeletal care, and more, less and less understanding of what it is that we're really doing, because the message has gotten so muted and so politicized and so just completely warped that for a client on the street to understand it, it's almost impossible, let alone a practitioner. So from your perch, what have you been seeing, and what's the trend you think going forward?
Well, I exactly agree with you, but I think everything's a cycle, and the pendulum swung about as far as it can go, and I think it's going to come back, and I'm trying to be part of that, bringing it back. And that's
what
the book's about. And we've got a ability right now through the internet with Facebook and Twitter and all these social media that we can get a message out that we couldn't do before. Because not only did the insurance companies and the pharmaceuticals get together, but they had media against us too. And now suddenly we can get a message out that we couldn't. Even the self-publishing forms. You know, I can put a book out now and nobody can stop me. Whereas before it took, you know, millions of dollars, or, you know, it was ridiculous. And now we can put a message out there, and we could even, like, what we're doing right now. This wasn't available to us 5 years ago.
This wasn't around. I don't know, if this was around when we actually had a shot at the pinata, maybe we had a chance to influence a greater percentage of the population. Now, you know, Deepak Chopra takes a nap, wakes up, he's got another book, and he's on every talk show, and you know,
I still think we have a chance, but we've got to start getting a message out. And part of it, in fact,
I just want to know, because this is something that probably people listen to the show every week. They get tangential hits of this. If you can, in a soundbite, what is the message to people?
Well, the message that I want to get out to people is adaptation, that we adapt. And the thing that I want to get across, even like with the blood pressure, I'm hopeful about the blood pressure study, and I just got into it with somebody on Facebook about this, because blood pressure isn't what chiropractic's concerned about. What I want to see is, can we improve the ability of people to adapt even if their blood pressure doesn't get better. In other words, what if the 5% that are having strokes and heart disease that have high blood pressure, what if their blood pressure isn't what needs to be corrected? What if we adjust them and even though their blood pressure doesn't go down, they quit having strokes and heart disease? That's what I want to find out. Now, in addition, we want to find out, okay, does chiropractic care actually help people become more healthy? Well, somebody argued, well, you can't get research funding for that. I said, okay, so get research funding for your blood pressure study. You already got that right. Now just give them a survey as you're taking care of them. Do a complete survey of their health. And maybe you'll find out that, son of a gun, their blood pressure didn't go down, but their hemorrhoids got better. Well, that's a pretty nice finding. And it's the kind of serendipitous findings that we need to be taking advantage of. And I'm afraid we'll just stay too focused on just the disease of the moment rather than trying to look at, okay, how did their overall health do? And that's what B.J. Palmer was doing in his chiropractic research clinic, was he'd have a chiropractic side where the chiropractors would work on patients. He had the medical side, which would do all the blood and urine tests. But rather than trying to focus on any given disease, he just said, okay, well, what happened to the blood and urine test? Did they normalize or not? And he found out they normalized.
Well, what happened was, if you go back even further, the original chiropractic patient, with Dee Dee Palmer, gets on the table, and this is like anymore, it becomes like like an apocryphal story. But
right,
maybe the public doesn't even know. I mean, I'm Harvey Lillard.
About the hearing story.
Does anyone know who Harvey Lillard is? I mean, janitor down there, cleaning up the streets there in Brady Street. He's deaf. I don't even know why he was deaf. He became deaf later in life, I guess. And Dee Dee's over there working away, and he decides he's gonna adjust this guy, and he regains his hearing. Now, what happened was what you would think would happen. He thinks he discovered the cure for deafness. So everybody's lined up outside the clinic, getting adjusted for deafness, but as you said, their heart condition's improving, their respiratory conditions are improving, their posture's getting better. All these other benefits are happening, but because the filter was, well, did your hearing get any better? What's the standard? But all these other benefits are happening. And it's really, 100 and whatever years later, it seems that chiropractic still is burdened with that, better mousetrap type of a paradigm that we have to out allopathic, medicine and be a better symptom changer than be a better function restorer, which they never do. That's not their agenda at all. Their agenda is basically to stimulate or inhibit, chemical processes and bring about some sense of quietude. And it used to be called palliative care. Then they called it curative care, which got into legalese. But when you tell the Harvey Lillard story, I used to tell the Harvey Lillard story. I'd tell it plain and simple what happened, and I asked the patient, what do you think of that? And I would give him a multiple choice test. Do you think he discovered the cure for deafness? Was the most common answer.
Right.
Is that a result of cause and effect, Aristotelian logic, A causes B, or is it one of those things where people just don't understand the way their body functions, so they don't understand what he was doing?
I think it's a result of their education program.
That's why
I go through the whole evolution-based medicine concept in the first half of the book. I mean, our model.
Give us a couple minutes of that, because that's a very important chunk that people blow off because, they don't seem to apply, the base, fundamental things here that would make a lot of this stuff easier to understand. So give us a couple minutes on that evolutionary concept, because it's once you get that, now you're in a dynamic, rhythmic universe instead of a static, sort of platonic one.
Right. Well, the key to the difference between evolution-based medicine and anything else that's not evolution-based or anything that's intelligence-based is that in order for us to adapt, there has to be some intelligence that's monitoring our environment and controlling our function. And if that's not true, then we can't adapt. So my whole idea, my theory on this, and I actually developed this after having an argument with some doctors about chiropractic versus medicine, and what they really were saying was they didn't believe that the body had any intelligence. And it was based, as I saw, it was based on an evolution concept that evolution is really based on atheism. And the whole idea is that somehow our intelligence evolved as matter and energy changed over time through evolution, somehow intelligence can evolve. And what I'm saying in my book is that that's, I think, a logical fallacy. And part of it is we have to realize that for evolution, there is a time arrow. The dinosaurs actually come before people. And if you have a time arrow and you start looking at cause and effect relationships, causes have to come before effects. If that's true, then which comes first, the thought that I will walk across the room and the desire to do so, or walking across the room? Well, if the thought comes first, it didn't come from the matter of my body. It came from someplace else. And if it comes from someplace else, then there's this intelligent realm that science is refusing to deal with. And it's a principal part of our being. And that's what's causing our adaptation. So I'm saying that all of our function really happens in this intelligent realm first and controls. That's how we control matter. And what I want to see is if we can take science to be a more intelligence-based, and I guess I'm kind of throwing in with the intelligent design bunch, but I want to keep it away from pure creationism. I'm not into that either. But there's something that helps us control matter. Otherwise, our thoughts would be a result of the matter, and there's no such thing as, well, I go through, there's no such thing as a placebo effect, because we're saying a placebo effect means that somehow we just decided to be well, and that's what made us well. The thought that we would be well is what made us well. Well, if our thoughts is a result of the configuration of energy and matter of my brain, then I had to actually change my brain before I got the thought, which means that every treatment is actually a change of the brain to give me the thought that I'd be well. Well, we don't really believe that. So
no.
There's a fallacy in the whole line of thinking.
Again, this is one of those conundrums that I stare at the wall sometimes at night trying to figure out how do you get people who, it's almost like people that live in a two-dimensional universe being communicated to with someone from a three-dimensional universe that I could see depth and you can't. All you can see is height and width. So when it comes to understanding their well-being, they only understand the superficial layer. They don't understand the background, the involuntary part, the part that's working not consciously, you know, that they don't have any influence over, that they're guided by. And sometimes I say, you know, when I get in trouble, which is often, is that when I talk, you know, how does that make you feel? I'll say to somebody, oh, they, whatever, label, angry, whatever. And I'm saying, well, what if I told you that you don't get angry? Angry gets you. Angry is a vibration. You tune into it. You breathe in it. You move in it. And then you live it out. It's like your body becomes this protein prism that basically assimilates frequencies. Uh-oh, scary. Can't deal with it. And then, you know, you get the song here.
Whoop, whoop. You know what I'm saying? Then you got the flows. Then it trip off the flow masses.
Okay, so that's why to explain it to someone who has no clue about what goes on, like point to your spleen is a game I used to play with a lot of the kids here, and no one ever told them where their spleen was, so they point anywhere, you know? And it's like not understanding what goes on inside themselves on a physical level is to me, is troubling enough. But when you start getting into the metaphysical level, like you're just talking the abstract level of intention and thought and memory and all the things you can't put a fork in, that's where the shrinky-dinks take over. And they install a bunch of very, to me, sort of self-limiting stories that only like make you think that you're more powerless. And then when you get sick of all that, you get in your car and you drive out to the wilderness and you go to one of these hippy-dippy-doo workshops on the weekend that tells you create your own reality. And everybody's chanting and singing Twyman songs. And they go home thinking they're 50 feet tall until they get into rush hour traffic the next day or something. Oh, wait a minute, I created the traffic, and they bump up against the end of their little paradigm. So when it comes back to and we'll go from the whole kit and caboodle here, when it goes from the disease based model that they're indoctrinated in from basically the time their mother's pregnant, the pregnancy's treated like a disease, all the way through their preschool years and all the antibiotics, all the vaccines, everything else, and then when you go through communicable disease, you know, through grade school and high school and then into college, and then when you get out in the public and you go through syndromes and all the other things, cradle to grave, you're warned that something's going to get you. Whether it's sugar-laden drinks or communal bereavement or whatever you want to go, or this guy's talking about, you know, his the stress of deadlines, there's an endless array of factors that you would say would only, as an intelligent thinking person, would say, well, It's like a Marine. I adapt and I overcome, and it doesn't get me. In fact, not all stress is bad. In fact, there's good stress called eustress that makes me feel confident and powerful, and I grow and I learn and I change and all that. No. We're going to emphasize the part where you lose. So if that's the basis of it, then the practitioner level is reduced to treatment on interventions based on a whole bunch of kind of, like, I would say, cook the books type of numbers. And then at the tippy top of it, you're left all by yourself there with a set of genetic predispositions, lifestyle addictions, behavioral limitations, all these things that just tell you that it's like going to Vegas, the house wins. So you cut all that in half and you say, okay, we're going to go the other direction here. I had a marketer on the air a couple weeks ago say, how do you get this behavior installed in people when you don't get access to them until they've already fallen to the cracks? He says, well, you got to basically, walk your own walk here and say it's going to take you. You got to get a hold of a bunch of five-year-olds and you got to talk to them for 20 years. And then maybe you'll get an effect that's going to, rapidly go out there and influence the culture, because by the time they get to 25, someone on the show about a month ago said we get 10,000 advertisements a day. How many of them do you think are related to drugs or overstimming or, some type of behavior that's going to lead you to one of those studies? So as an individual practitioner, like you're saying, we're at a choice point now. There is sort of a little bit of a bubble here that if the pendulum is going to swing back, it financially, I think, is going to be one of the factors. People just simply can't afford that much allopathic care, even though they're going to be crying for it. And they're going to start turning to, I hate to say it, folk medicine, kitchen table wisdom, and then maybe common sense. It's going to go all the way around the corner until they start saying, I don't know how many people I meet that I have to teach basic, movement things to in parking lots and, body flushes and the apple cider vinegar, the basic stuff that I've been doing forever that is completely off the radar of most people because it's too damn simple. Chiropractic suffers from that. It suffers from its simplicity because it's so elegant and it's so, I would say, it honors the bodies and respects the body like someone that respects the ocean. Like if you talk to the sailors, they respect the ocean. They respect the tides. They don't fight it. They don't try to go against it all the time. It's not about trying to beat it back. It's trying to work with it. We don't work with one symptom, whether it's fever, whether it's inflammation, whether it's pain, whether it's even fatigue. Everything is to fight that stuff off. So, I guess to kind of, put this thing in a bow here, if you look out at the chiropractic profession, what percentage of them do you think understands the principles of adaptation, things you were talking about? Because when I look out there, there's just a huge gap between training and practice, and then all the things in between that are supposed to keep us current, which I'll call it, license renewal for lack of a better word, but it's really just a bunch of ground apples that puts a lot of money in people's pockets. It doesn't really educate the field to keep up with things. I mean, if you ask the field right now, what's the concept of enphermy? For we've been batting that around for a couple of years now. It's not something that's brand new. It's about 15 years old. It comes out of the physics community, and it explains a lot of things you were talking about, how we adapt, because we've accepted since I guess, maybe it goes back to Newton, that there's a law of conservation of energy. Everyone gets that. There's a law of conservation of mass. Matter cannot be changed or destroyed, only transformed, right? And then this third thing, enfermy, E-M-F-O-M-Y, is there's a conservation of organization, which means the entropy, which is the randomness that we all are afraid of, the heat death, the inevitability of it all, that our systems, because we're living systems, we have an organizational threshold that we are always going to go back to. We conserve this. We don't change into linen furniture, and we don't change into backyard barbecue sets. We stay humans, And that tensegrity about it, that ability to regain our form, is the basis of chiropractic, because chiropractic was not about healing. Oh, no. It's about restoration. We forgot all that. When I think of the language those guys had to work with and the lack of communication between different factions of the scientific community about 50, 60 years ago and the instantaneous access we have now, I'm almost embarrassed that we can't influence more people. with the amount of access we have. But basic words like that, restoration, adaptation, you know, rhythm, all these things are to me, should be part of the conversation, and they're hardly ever part of the conversation because all I ever see chiropractors preaching about is adjustments. Patients
yeah, but I think it is.
Procedure.
I think it is getting better, and maybe it's just because, you know, I'm making little ripples in the little pond I'm in.
Yeah.
But, well, you know, I think if enough of us get together and do that, we'll,
yeah.
you know,
all
the ponds
at
some point
will convert. All holistics is local. Yeah. I just, like I said, I continue to go, you know, look at and you look at the way that the rest of the world now is starting to look at chiropractic as any mention of subluxation is now heresy. Which I don't think is entirely a bad thing, but they're all preaching neuromusculoskeletal care because they look at that as the well-behaved, sort of not the uppity chiropractor. The one that's doing wellness care, the one that's doing more family care or longitudinal care, they're now the heretic. They're now the one they get the Frankenstein torches out for. And the chiropractors that are operating in other countries aren't used to this type of marketing against them. And they're all running under rocks instead of saying, how come it's okay for Chopra and Bruce Lipton and all these other experts to go out and say the same basic worldview that I'm applying? They're saying it as a theory, as a concept, and I'm applying it, and epigenetics and all that stuff. And it's like, and we don't get to talk in modern terms because we're always reduced to, you know, the bone setter. We're always reduced to that procedure. And I think that, since there's not enough chiropractors to adjust people in the state of Washington, all over the country, let alone the world, less people are going to get to chiropractic adjusting tables than they are going to get to hear the message you just talked about. And if people had that message, they would seek that care. That's to me, what the big gap is right now, is that there's not enough people sending out that very simple, very powerful message that preaches, and I hate to say the word preaches, but it does, it preaches first-person authority. You run you. Not Big Pharma, not the insurance companies, not Obamacare, not the Big Bad Wolf, not the sugar-laden drinks, not communal bereavement, none of that stuff. You run you. But if you don't know how you run, then you're going to be run. You know, someone's going to run you over, basically. And you're going to fall for every little symptom-chasing thing that you can, or state-chasing thing you can find out there. So if you're marketing chiropractic as a alternative, which I hate that, I'm trying to, the words are coming out like crooked, alternative to mainstream medical care, otherwise known as a third leading cause of death, you know, otherwise known as...
You filthy criminals.
You know, if you're going to market yourself as parallel to that, as a more kind of a, you know, granola-friendly version of it, then to me you're just taking us all to the woodshed anyway. I don't want to know you. I want to go 180 degrees from that because all it does is ends up with a bunch of people addicted to the media telling them how to feel, think, and act. And we can't, as people that know different and think different and live different, accept that fate and take it, you know, basically as sort of a career sentence that you're always going to be in the backwater, you're never going to get heard because you don't have the right way of saying it to a bunch of people that are addicted to painkillers and you know, go to sleep and say goodnight to the Lunestra moth unless they're woken up to, you know, by their prostate to go pee, you know. So I guess it's you see things getting better locally in your practice, that's great, good for you. But in terms of the way the chiropractic profession is run, I don't see
I'm not saying locally in my practice. I'm saying locally by those chiropractors that I'm able to touch on Facebook and other social media.
Oh, I think that conversation is
changing. I think there's
changing.
A growing movement right there
yeah.
that we get to exchange ideas. And actually, one of the things I'm finding is that we have this schism right now between the people that think they're scientists in chiropractic and the philosophers, and the philosophers don't see any reason to have science. They think they're above it or beyond it or something. And we have the scientists who don't see any need for philosophy because they think it's all neuromusculoskeletal and they see themselves as being, you know, allopaths. And there's a group that, you know, it's a spectrum. It's not a either-or kind of situation, of course. But what I'm finding is as I challenge each side of this, I'm developing, and I haven't got it yet, but I'm certainly, I think I'm working toward being able to bring the two together. And once we can bring the two together, we can take a message out that actually makes some sense. But,
well, that,
you know, we can't, right now I can take, you know, nearly any of these guys that think they're philosophers, and you just give them a few things of science and ask them to explain it, and they throw up their hands and say, well, you can't measure vitalism. Well, how does that help us?
Exactly. Then you're not really being a philosopher, you're really being an evangelist.
Exactly. And that's our problem. So we got the evangelists on one side.
Yeah.
Then we got the science guys on the other that, you know, I can't explain to them how we have an intelligence because they're so into the evolution-based medicine model.
Well, they're more fatalist than anything else because I say, well, why do you care? We're all basically just a bunch of victims of entropy anyway. We should just patiently wait our 70 or 80 years and slough off the planet, right? I mean, I'm done.
Right.
I just, like I said, when it comes to that stuff, the hollow arguments and the people that drink this Kool-Aid like it's manna from heaven, they just never stop with it. And the thing is, both sides equally disgust me, by the way. When I see chiropractors, you know, spouting innate philosophy and hair on a wooden leg and, you know, and all that stuff, it's just as sort of disconcerting to me than when I see, you know, the upper cervical study with the high blood pressure thing come out. Everyone goes, great, good chiropractor, good.
I agree with you. The problem is that we've allowed that to happen without calling anybody to task on both sides of it. And so
The public by and large doesn't listen.
Well, the public can't get it, but we got to do it to each other. We got to clean up our own act. And
yeah,
we haven't
well,
been
what,
willing to
what,
do
that's,
that.
You know, and that's where I guess, I don't know if you've been reading along with Matt McCoy as he goes through his diatribes on McCoyPress.com there. We went from the death of subluxation to Europe is burning to you're on your own. And he's gone completely off the map.
I haven't read his latest. I got the death of subluxation. What's the latest?
Well, the title, I mean, this is in reaction to the death of subluxation article that came out in the European blog about 2 weeks ago.
Right.
Like I said, you know, chiropractic is going through what it went through in the late 80s and early 90s here, where they're getting more of the neuromusculoskeletal care because that's the scientifically supported side of chiropractic, the part that's going to stay within the allopathic boundaries. But what came out was Matt had his first response to it, which was, hey, look at this, you know, this is the end of the world. And then he came out with an article that he just published. That do vertebral subluxations exist? Was the title of the
all right
of the email? But he wrote a paper called "The Existence and Clinical Meaningfulness of Vertebral Subluxations." Right. So basically, I had written him back and saying that this is the best opportunity we had to make the case for intelligence, not interference. Let's stop talking interference and start talking about coherence. Let's start working towards the salutogenic side, the part that's the restoration side, the part that, you know, Stevenson talked about. Chiropractic is about restoration, you know, and the healing process is something the body does, which is your adaptation side of it. There's a self-organizing part of the system that does it. You're a living system. When you cut yourself shaving, you don't have to be a biochemist to fix the wound. It does it on its own. How? You know, those are all parts of adaptation, parts of years and millions of years of biology, and it's like that. Like, you know, I'm going to hopefully be interviewing this woman that wrote The Male Brain in a couple of weeks about gender differences in brain design, which is fairly recent, you know, research the last 30 years or so. And you'd be surprised at how vitalistic and how intelligent based her language is. And she's got the MD after her name.
Mm-hmm.
And if you put that same material through the chiropractic, you know, filters. You know, they would come up with a zillion ways to make it into technique jargon, and it would become another labeling system, another third-person labeling system. And that's what I'm afraid happened with old Matt there, is that he saw this as an affront to his flag, his brand, which is the JVSR brand. And I said, I told him, I don't know, 4 or 5 years ago, I said, look, right now nobody cares what JVSR stands for, especially not the chiropractors, especially not even the subluxation-based ones, and they fight about what day of the week it is. So if you just made it a broader title and discussed applications of these principles underneath it, and you called it what it could be, which would attract more interest from the public, which is the Journal of Vitality and Salutogenic Research, because that's what would attract, like, you know, NIH people, because they understand salutogenesis more than they understand subluxation. Believe me, the shrinks get all kinds of money for salutogenesis, and usually where that research money shows up is where there's been natural disasters, where there's been the earthquakes and the mudslides and the hurricanes and the floods. Who adapts better? Wasn't one of the original Dee Dee Palmer questions was, how come two guys working in the same shop side by side, one gets sick, one doesn't? He was
right.
asking questions 100 and something years ago that we're still asking now. How come some people can recover from trauma and some people have post-traumatic stress the disease, which is another dumb disease? It's basically that their system was wired to adapt better, and they entrained more coherent, you know, sensory motor loops than person B. And you can adapt or you can maladapt. And it's not disease. It's just a matter of degree of adaptation, degree and extent of adaptation, which is, if we were talking about it from that standpoint, technique wouldn't matter, all the other things would go away, and the philosophy, the science, and the art would actually fit into something neatly called a discipline. But we don't have that in chiropractic. We have politics, we have a lack of money, and we have a lot of greedy bastards, about the same 25 or so, that have been running the voice of the profession for the whole time we've been in it, and they've been muting that message because their agenda, sad to say, is to basically get 5,000, 6,000, 7,000 of the 70 of us that are out there with the shingles out there to be part of their little tribe, whether it's Ben Lerner's group or whether it's the Sopranos across the river there in Jersey, Gintempo and Kent, or whether it's one of the other practice management groups that you could, you know, C.J. Mertz, or if he's still out there, with the lawsuits didn't gobble him up, that will practice according to some paradigm that they set so they can continue to feed you, you know, wall charts and kids' day materials and things like that to run a business. And basically, that's what it's about. The schools are in the school business. The practice management guys are in the consulting business. And the guys in the field are running a clinic that has to turn a profit. And because of the fact that there ain't no money when there are no drugs, you have to work. And chiropractors are like flying a kite when there's no wind. That boy better run to get that kite in the sky. You got to hustle. So we're always up against that you know, sort of limitation or challenge. And because of the fact that we don't get paid to educate the public, we don't get paid to challenge, you know, the big pharma people. Put me in front of the Senate once a week when one of these lawsuits comes up, a Vioxx, some. I love it. You know, the thing is, that's where the money could have been spent in healthcare reform, and it wasn't. It wasn't spent in stopping the insanity, and we still have, you know, studies that are going to basically reinforce that pattern. So, you know, I guess to wrap it up here, you're hopeful. What's the one thing you think is going to happen between now and whenever the healthcare reform debate becomes, you know, everyday life that you think is going to move the pendulum more towards holistic, independently thinking, you know, first-person authority type living?
Well, I think you hit on it earlier. It's going to be economics.
Money.
The system's
yeah.
just going to be so expensive that they're going to have. And the other thing is we're getting away from the politics of it to the bean counters. And once the accountants take over, they're just going to look at it and go, okay, who takes care of this the cheapest? And
well,
we
yeah.
better come up with a better way of doing it. And it used to be that we were that, you know. And
well,
I think we still are. But it, you know, it used to be, well, let's see how quickly we can get somebody, you know, pain free and functioning well, and that's what we hung our hat on.
Well, now the chiropractors in New Mexico want to do it with drugs. So
right,
you know.
But I'm you know, I don't see that really going anywhere. I think, you know, we're making
hopefully.
A big deal out of that, but the real thing's going to wind up getting back to, you know, when all's said and done, and Obama's even been talking about some of this anyway, is, you know, we can't afford all these tests. You know, people are going to have to learn to do with fewer tests. And he's going to cut back and cut back on what they're paying for and what they're paying for and keep cutting back till eventually we'll get back to a system where people are going to go, well, nobody's paying for anything, so what can I do? You know, they're going to be paying out of pocket unless they need some catastrophic deal, and even then we're going to wonder whether anybody's going to pay for it. So, you know, maybe they'll get their cancer covered by Obamacare, but, you know, we're probably not going to pay for blood pressure medicine if it's not showing to be successful. See what I'm saying?
Well, there'll be enough sugar-laden drinks for us to cope with the, you know, the delay in the meantime, so... All right, just give your websites out in case anyone wants to order your books or check out your show or, you know, see what you're doing out there in the wilderness.
Well, I've got several, so they can just use my name. You want to just put my name on there, they can just Google my name and see where I'm at. I'm all over the place.
Robert Affalter, digital, basically
digital.
Omnipresent.
Well, put Robert Affalter there, they'll get something.
Yeah, you,
right,
you're doing Saturday
it.
Morning as your show still?
I'm doing Saturday morning at 9:30 for 15 minutes and giving some kind of a talk to something to think about. I call it intelligence-based living.
Okay, a little Saturday morning pep talk after you get back
yeah.
from soccer and you're sort of putting up your shoes for the weekend. You check out Robert's show, and thanks for joining us here tonight on Summertime and helping me keep myself from banging my head against the wall for 45 minutes. And, you know, hopefully no one will label that as a syndrome, too. I'll probably opposition defiant disorder by the time we get up the air. But, so,
thank you. Have a good night. It was fun.
Take
Bye.
Care, man. All right. We went far out of the wilderness there. I'm going to look something up. Are you kidding me? You got to be kidding me. We'll go here.
Come on, shake your body, baby, do that conga. No, you can't control yourself any longer. Come on, shake your body, baby, do that conga. No, you can't control yourself any longer.
Anyway, somebody run this damn Idol show. I mean, last night you had The Biggest Loser, you had the dancing show, you had the other show. Lost a couple days ago. This is where we are. So we have Paul Abdul singing singing My Way. Let's see if that made it to YouTube yet, because that would be an apropos way of ending tonight's show. I don't even know who won. Does anyone know who won? Who won this damn thing? I missed it. I got so into the banter there with Affalter, I forgot. The Mets won. That's all I care about. Shut out those damn Phillies again. Boom, chickens, you're about to do that conga. Actually, while I'm looking that up, let's go back to the conga. 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 You know what? Screw you, conga. Screw you, conga. Oh, man. Oh, wait. It's just in. Somebody won? I'm trying to get the YouTube to come up here. It's not coming up. Oh, his Idol backstage.
They are bumped up, and we're expecting Lee to walk out of there with Nokia in any minute. Coming up.
Okay.
It's my exclusive interview with Carrie
Underwood.
All right. Well, there we go. The dude won.
All right.
I didn't watch 1 second of Idol, but apparently the dude, whoever the dude is, won that show. Let's see if I get this Paul Abdul thing up here. Let me check out for the night. Next week we're going to have another chiropractor on. We're going to be arguing about volume versus viscosity. She's a high volume practitioner out in the middle of Illinois somewhere, and we share a lot in terms of philosophy. But she's got it all going on. She's living the dream, and she just got back from a mission trip to Costa Rica. We'll talk about spirituality, how it relates to her paradigm in care, and why it's taboo among the non-woo. So let's see if we can find us some Paul Abdul here. Everybody, gather around me. This should be pretty quick. Let's see if it's up here yet. Set to return. Paul Abdul quits. Simon Cowell leaving. I'm so sorry I missed that. Let's see. American Idol. Lee DeWiz won, I guess. Is this the end? This is nuts. How could this not be up on YouTube yet? Strange. All right, we'll go the Google route here. We got a couple minutes left. Everybody, I gotta hear that song again. I don't know why. Who the hell's the conga? There's something Memorial Day weekend about it, I guess.
Come on, shake your body, baby, do that conga. No, you can't control yourself any longer. Come on, shake your body, baby, do that conga. No, you can't control yourself any longer.
Thank you. trumpets. Oh, God, this thing. All right, so let's see. No video here, but this Phoebe looking Philo guy, Lee DeWiz, I guess, and Crystal Bower Sox. Paul Abdul came on stage to say goodbye. Many video clips were played for Simon's swan song. The girls sang with Christina Aguilera. All the idols except David Cook and top 10 contestants from previous years got together for a group number or a tribute to Simon. I wonder what David Cook's deal was. Even Carrie Underwood was there. Janet Jackson did Nasty Boys. So I missed that laugh riot. It was near the end of the show. Joe Cocker came out and did With a Little Help from My Friends. And Ryan revealed who won, and the winner was Lee DeWiz. Everybody can go back to their regularly scheduled lives at this point. That is as dumb as it gets. So let's check in some real news here. Let's see, we got the Crankies. They were in a 3-2 game late, and they're up to take two from the Twinkos. Let's see. All right. I don't know what's going on here. Is that a rain delay? Looks like a rain delay. Got Jeter running around from about 6 years ago. All right, let's go check on the basketball game. Yeah, I'm covering it all. Cosmos, all kinds of crap. All right, here we go. All right, the basketball game. We've got Orlando 71-65 in the third, 5 minutes to go. Take a little look at this while I'm getting a Yankee score. You're listening to Summertime Meandering here at 10:26. Mets win. Lead the Wiz won. Lead the Wiz. Lead meet the Wiz. Hey, it was raining in Minnesota tonight. Maybe the game's over. Who knows? I don't think so. Da-da-da-da-da-da. 74-65 Magic. We could be going back for another game here. Tune in for that. See what I'm saying? How easy it is to forget about everything? We're right back in the soup. So let's see. Everybody. Where are the Yankees? Oh, they did win 3-2. Game's over. So they swept. The sons of bitches. Okay. And Boston swept Tampa Bay. Or they're going to sweep them. Up to 11-2. Wow. All right. So there you go. There's your sports roundup. We don't know what LeBron's doing yet. Giant Stadium, the Meadowlands got the Super Bowl. I got to find me an exit song. And that's actually beat those bastards again from Philly. And, see if they shut him out or not. Mets, yeah, 5-0. Okay. All right, guys. Next week, like I said, we'll have Martha on here. And I'll see what she has to say about herself with the spirituality and stuff. But I think this is an appropriate Lou Reed song to play us out. What do you think? I'll let you decide. Yeah. I want to thank our guest, Dr. Robert Affolter. You can catch him anywhere. Just go plug him in on Google. He's got his books up there. He's got his Intelligent Living show on Saturdays. And he likes to banter with me once in a while about these topics. So what's not to love about the Affolter? You can't get enough of the Affolter. All right, so I wish you guys a great and healthy Memorial Day weekend. And, we'll get back here next Wednesday night for some more Soma Time. This is Dr. Mark saying, travel light through the darkness.
bereavement.
Newspapers on his feet. The old man beats him because he's too tired to beg. He's got now brothers and sisters. They're brought up on their knees. It's hard to run when a coat hanger hits you on the thighs. Pedro dreams of being older and killing the old fuck, but that's a slim chance. He's going to the boulevard. He's getting out to the dirty boulevard. I'm going down to the dirty boulevard. Get it out to the dirty boulevard. Going down.
Spiral on, sapiens.